Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready? Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston, and we're doing a live Q&A with you guys today, sharing our secrets to stop a divorce fast. How are you doing today, Mark?
Doing all right, all things considered, but yeah, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Doing fabulous. And if you're watching us live, go ahead and leave a comment. Let us know that you can see and hear us okay. We always want to make sure our tech is working, and post any questions that you have. If you're new to the podcast and our live Q&As, we often love to work with you guys in the chat. So post your questions there, and then we can go back and forth and go deeper into the situation with you. We did get a lot of submissions in our form that we posted. So we're going to go through some of those questions as well, and specifically share with you guys what you need to do to stop a divorce and how our process may help you to get there quickly. But before I do that, we're going to share our client win of the week. This one comes with permission from Nicole. She says, a huge win. I came back from a trip to the beach to find my husband had moved everything back to our house, everything. At first, I thought it was just his winter clothes, but then I went into the spare room to see boxes of his stuff he had taken. I am so excited. This tells me he is looking at us being okay and staying. My heart is full. So this is a client of ours that was on the verge of divorce. They were already separated. Husband had moved out. And this was a huge win as she applied our PATH process to getting her husband to want to come back and him taking steps towards her, which is so important. Rather than you constantly chasing after your spouse, desperate to try to get them back, we help you flip that script so that your spouse is actually the one that starts to take some steps towards you. Awesome. All right. So our first question, and again, if you're watching us live, hello and welcome, leave a question here in the chat and we will make sure that we address it with you guys. But our first question comes from Donovan, and mute my other computer. Okay. We don't want to hear two of me. All right. So this one comes from Donovan, and he says, it all started in March of last year when she started fantasizing about a coworker. She tried to date him. He turned her down. I found out and we tried to move on from that. She then asked me for a divorce in October. This was after giving me a very nice 13th anniversary card. She doesn't trust that I can change. I scared her with wanting to have a child together. Something we always talked about, but I never took seriously because of the expense due to her having her tubes tied just before I met her. Our oldest daughter turned 18 and moved out in July. She initially said she needed space to figure things out, so I left on November. Then my truck broke down that day and she exploded on me, blaming me for all of it, saying she hated my problems, that I was a burden, I would never change, etc. Then I finally visited family until December 1st, when she told me she'd not care whether I stayed as long as it was not with her. We disagreed about our investments and our property. She tried to keep it from me, tried to force me out to be bought out. Then after she threatened to shoot me if I did go to the property, I filed a temporary restraining order on her. She did one on me for harassment. I dropped mine, defeated hers by showing her we had regular conversations, and that she lied multiple times for commitments to seeing a mediator, my counselor, the length of our separation, claimed property was solely hers. I have now told her I needed to move back, and the whole time there were roommates. Let's see, I'm gonna skim ahead a little bit here. So she's refusing to talk with me at all. I told her I was going to move back there, sleep in the living room, and that's when she forced me out. I'm now in the back of my property in the other residence. Okay, so she's threatening to have him move out again. She won't have any regular conversations. All right.
All right, there's a lot going on with this.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, like, I mean, we didn't even read the whole thing. There was a whole big, long paragraph, but, you know, some things stood out. You know, one, there are attempts at restraining orders. There are threats of physical violence. If we go down further, There's mm-hmm. a threat to slaughter the farm animals. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on here. This is a lot going on.
So
he says that he loves her and then he wears his wedding ring and he's trying to be, you know, not be with date or have sex with anyone else. I want to break through her entrenchment and resentment and anger towards me because I'm a totally new man, taking care of myself, growing and making even more money. So he's working on himself and looks like he's trying to turn things around and be positive, but she's really not seeing it and really not talking with him. It's been going on for over a year. They live on the same property, it looks like, but not together. And he says, everything I try just backfires, but he's 100% committed to trying to see if this can work out.
Yeah. All right. Well, my first thought there is there seems to be a lot of emotion with everything going on, you know, between restraining orders and threats of violence and all, just lots of these situations seem to escalate very quickly, is my general read on that. It tells me that there's a lot of emotion here. Anger, probably some amount of resentment, maybe even some amount of fear. And so, like, when we start throwing those sort of things in, people start to look really irrational. It wouldn't surprise me if there has been some previous trauma that is also being reacted to. There's something being triggered there. That almost always when I see like really extreme and irrational behavior, I'm not going to say every time, but in a lot of cases, there's some like past trauma that hasn't really been worked through. And that's why, you know, like it seems extreme, but really they're reacting to that sort of thing. So what are we doing here, Heather? We're talking about like how, like what the path that this we could actually take to fix this, right?
Yeah, like what would need to happen here in order to turn the situation around?
Yeah.
And this one is more complicated. So there's going to be a lot of different experiences that you guys have across the spectrum. We're talking about restraining orders and things like that. It's become so volatile. What do we do with that, Mark?
Yeah, so I want to say right off the bat, like that a situation like this, this is not one that's going to immediately turn around. If I had to, like, gaze into my crystal ball and predict what would happen if this were to get better, is it would probably show up with a lot of resistance at first. And that's a lot of what we're seeing. Like he's saying, I'm trying to do things better. And then she's reacting. A large part of this is because there's a phase where there just isn't a lot of trust that things are different. And very likely his wife sees the problems that she has with him as impossible to solve. So why try to work things out? You know, it's better to push him away and to threaten, because that's going to keep her safe. So what I'm saying there is, like, in these cases, I would expect some resistance. And as Donovan here is building up some trust. And that's really important to keep in mind. Because a lot of times in these cases, it looks like there's not a lot happening externally on the outside, when really, like, you know, as you build up trust, as you have a lot of consistency with actions, there are a lot of things going on underneath the surface. And so for Donovan, I would focus a lot on making sure that he is approaching these situations in a very calm and solution-oriented manner. You know, like I see the problem here is there's just so much escalation, and that needs to be soothed a little bit before anything can really be fixed. If I were to go further, I'd say, hey, he needs to really be conscientious about the, you know, we call them home messages, but like the themes of communication that he's trying to build with his wife. If for those of you who haven't listened to like a whole lot of our podcast, we talk about home messages. That's an internal term here with High Thrive Coaching. If I had to summarize it, it's the affirmations that we build with other people that are very clearly communicated and backed by action. It's like the very brief summary. And so, like, I would tell Donovan, hey, be very conscientious about the kinds of messages that you're you're communicating to your wife, the kind of narrative that you're trying to build, and make sure that you're very consistent as you're trying to build up trust. In a lot of these cases here, there's a period of where that needs to happen, a lot of giving, and then we're able to shift a lot more towards accountability. Because if Donovan's been showing up calm consistently and trying to work towards solutions, then, you know, as his wife is reacting in these ways, he can say, hey, look, I'm do you hear the words that I'm using? I'm saying, hey, I would like to solve this for you. We don't need to have it this intense, and you're reacting towards me with a lot of like intense behavior. Maybe it's not me. So we like the ability to hold your partner accountable in these situations, you can only really do that if you yourself have shown up and are consistent and are very conscientious about what you're communicating. So those are like all the things that I would just kind of start with for Donovan is, like I said, be very aware of the narrative that you're building. Take some time to build up trust, have some patience while you're having to do that. And then when you're very confident that you've made some very solid changes that are recognized, then you can start shifting towards some accountability, some gentle but firm accountability towards your wife. And I think that's going to get you started on the right track. It's not going to get you all the way, but it's going to at least get the conversations flowing again.
Love that. So what I heard you share, Mark, is that it's a little bit about pattern interrupting, right? Pattern interrupting the tension, the volatility, the pattern of escalating things and making things more safe, stopping any further damage from happening that's going to pour fuel into the fire, starting to make things more safe, and then working on changing the story that they have about the relationship. And that's going to go a long ways to getting to the point where then you could start to put in some healthy boundaries, have some accountability to bring the relationship into a healthier, more balanced place. Beautiful. All right. Going to go here to a question live from, I think it's Caldier. I'm not quite sure how to say her name. Apologize if I got that wrong. They say, so I've been separated almost a year this April. I was just recently getting wins with her saying she loved me and missed me. She would apologize for things. Oh no, it just went away on my screen. Okay.
I have it here. I have it. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. She would apologize for things she has done wrong. We were meeting up for dinner and really thought we were going to get back together. We were going to meet up for dinner and she sent me a text saying she changed her mind and didn't want to meet up anymore and no longer wanted to meet in person to discuss our issues, even though she was the one that asked us to meet up each time. I never pushed, and now she thinks we are past meeting up. What is my next step? Do I need to step back? I just fear she's going to file for divorce and I'm anxious, even though I haven't shown it. I just don't know what to do now. I'm looking at further comments from Calder. Through the separation, I've worked on myself. I fixed how I've shown up. I went back to school for nursing, stopped begging, or even mentioning getting back together. I allowed her to come to me. And as I did, she was coming around until she randomly said, I no longer feel comfortable meeting up. So this is a little bit further in the process. I expect several things. If a spouse is backing away and saying that they're done, like I was talking about with Donovan, I expect a period of resistance, right? And then we start seeing some verbal changes. We start seeing like Calder was saying, like Calder is pretty much describing by the book what normally happens. He was saying that his wife is starting to apologize and recognize some of her mistakes. And then there is some, you know, we start getting into behavioral changes where she's seeking him out and looking for ways to meet up. What I would guess happened there is that whatever was really at the heart of the issue, the big fear that really drove them apart in the first place, was never really acknowledged or processed through. That would be my guess here. It almost sounds to me like there's some sort of trigger, some sort of something that reminded her of what had happened. And she's like, okay, see, here it is again, and I can't deal with this anymore. And I'm being very vague about this because I think Calder doesn't know what that is. And I'm saying, you know, there was a step missed here where it wasn't really uncovered what the real root problems were. I do think that Calder actually has an opportunity with this, where he could be very patient and he could say, hey, look, you know, this is what happened before. We didn't talk about this. And I can see that you got really upset here and you got really scared here. And I want to talk about that. We don't need to go out for dinner. I want you to feel safe. There's like opportunities to reinforce certain key messages and to start actually solving problems in a way that feels safe. So always with this process, there does need to come a time where the actual problems are solved. And I think Calder's probably gotten to that point. He can probably handle that, or the relationship can handle it. And my guess is it felt really good because they had kind of set the problems aside. They said, okay, we're not going to fight. We're going to go out to eat and we're going to, you know, like do all this other things, but never really solving the actual problem. So if he and Calder did do some things well, as in he allowed her to come to him and didn't put a lot of pressure on things, like those are all really good moves. It's like we just missed this one piece there, is what I'm seeing. Any thoughts on that, Heather?
Yeah, I like how he says that he stopped begging, even mentioning getting back together. And for those of you who are new to our process, that's always what we want to see happen at the very beginning, which is what most people don't do. A big mistake that most people make is pushing to work on the relationship, you know, begging, desperation, trying to manipulate them to get them back. So I'm really glad to see some of those behaviors, that you're doing them in the right way, that you took some of the pressure off and you stopped doing some of the things that are going to push her away more. But like Mark, I agree that there was something that's been missed here and there's something that needs to come out and be addressed. When there's this, things feel like maybe we're getting back together and then all of a sudden they pull away. We call that kind of the teeter-totter effect. So you're seeing some positive results from the actions that you're taking by taking the pressure off, making things a little more safe, working on yourself, even though that's not the only solution. You guys have heard me rant about that myth, but you know, you're doing these positive things, but when there's still something that crops up like that, that's an indicator that the story or the narrative that they have about you is still very prevalent. And that's going to cause you to have a spouse that's warm one minute and then cold the next minute, takes some steps towards you and then pulls away. And that's why it's really important to apply the rest of the process here in step 2, 3, and 4, so that you can create a new story about the relationship with her, that you can continue to address some of the unhealthy patterns or triggers that might be pushing her further away and resolve those so that she will start to take some steps towards you. So in a nutshell, you asked, should I just back off? You don't want to push her more right now. You don't want to push her to try to do things, but you want to create some safety, like Mark suggested here, around the conversations and around the communication so that you can actually look at what the issues are and then move forward from there.
Yeah, this person, you know, Calder is saying that he's really anxious, not sure what to do. And I think a lot can be, it's hard to just fake it, but like I think a lot can be done here if he was just very confident and said, hey, you know, like I noticed this right here. I noticed that you know how you reacted, and I'd like to resolve this and I'd like to talk about it. It doesn't mean that we're, you know, like I'm trying to push you into getting back together, but it seems like there's something to resolve. And I think, you know, like the more, this is the stage where I think Calder can be a bit more proactive and ask for some participation with solutions. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you. And you can continue to ask us questions for more clarity. And above all, we offer everyone a completely free breakthrough session where we go deep into your marriage and address these issues and show you exactly what you need to do in your situation to move forward. So if you want to claim that free session, just comment marriage session in the comments below, and we will hook you up with that right after the Q&A. We'll communicate in a one-on-one private conversation about that. All right, let's move on to a question here from Tina. Tina, you submitted multiple questions, so I'm going to try to like kind of put them all together. But you're saying that your spouse is checked out, sleeping in separate rooms, and she's having an affair. She took her wedding rings off and wants to be just friends. All right. And you haven't been able to hit the pause button yet. And I'm also seeing that she's completely checked out, distant and cold. We could communicate, but not about us. She says, I'm controlling and doesn't see a future that will ever change. And then I also see that you are sleeping in separate rooms I think I got most of it. No, you're fine, Gina. I see your comment there. No, it's helpful. Let's see.
And then I'm also seeing like here's a positive thing that I'm seeing from Tina is Tina's mentioning that there is still messages of care from her wife, where she's like saying, okay, hey, here's a snowstorm. I hope you're careful out there. Wanting to be friends still. It seems to be like one of the goals. So yeah. Any initial thoughts before I dive in, Heather?
Yeah, well, I know she is going through our path process and that she really understands like hitting the pause button here, right? So when your spouse is checked out, not really wanting to talk to you, saying, you know, I want to be friends, then we need to look at those underlying patterns about why she continues to pull away. And even beyond that, there's an affair going on. So affairs add a layer of complexity to the entire situation, right? Because then you have to look at, okay, what do I need to do to feel safe here? What kind of boundaries might need to be put in place? So that's something that we need to work on so that your spouse doesn't want to pull away anymore and starts to increase the communication towards you.
Yeah. So if I had to identify like the things that need to be addressed here, you know, one, we have the affair. Two, we have like there's the underlying marriage problems in general that are have gotten them to the point where they're sleeping in separate rooms. Tina did mention a couple of those complaints that like her wife is saying that she's too controlling. And so right there, we see the quote unquote, the impossible problem. Like the reason why Tina's wife is pulling away, she says, okay, Tina is not going to change right here. So if we had to tackle all this, like almost always, like if it's gotten to this point where like Tina's wife is saying, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. I'm going to move on, whatever it happens to be. And then there's an affair on top of that. We can't just jump right in and say, okay, you got to stop the affair. There's just not really, in most of those cases, I would say that commitment isn't there enough to make demands like that. Very, you know, by and large, like I do think that the marriage needs to look appealing again before the person who is having the affair is going to really consider dropping that relationship. And so why I'm saying this is just in general, it's not very effective to focus so much on the affair at that stage. It's much more important to focus in on like what the changes that need to happen and to try to build up trust in that. Because I would say the most important statement out of all these things that Tina said was this one statement right here where Tina said, she says I'm too controlling and doesn't see a future where that changes. Mm-hmm. And absolutely nothing's going to happen with the affair. There's not going to be any change in the bedroom situation. She's not going to come back if she doesn't see that there is some sort of solution there. So if I were to make a suggestion, I'd say, Tina, you need to focus in on creating some understanding around that problem and making some changes there. And without the pressure of like, okay, I'm doing this in order to get the relationship back, because then your motivation is corrupted or tainted and it's going to be seen as not valid. So much like some of the other people we're talking about here, there's going to be a period where there might be a little bit of resistance, but this is all about building up trust. And then, you know, from there, it's going to be a lot easier to shift that around. Like if you have a month or two where you've been very, you know, instead of controlling, you're doing the opposite of that, as in being very supportive of choices, having a lot of consideration and respect, things like that. Then, you know, you have a couple months like that and your wife has seen some changes, then it's a lot easier to say, hey, you know, you're wanting to be friends. We need to work through some things. Let's start like building the relationship back up. I think it's going to be a lot easier at that point. But, you know, if you haven't gotten there yet, then you absolutely need to focus on like figuring out what the problem is and actually demonstrating that things are different.
Agreed. And we have like 3 or 4 others here that are all about affairs. So it's a very common theme for you guys. And it needs to be handled with care. One of the worst things that you can do, which is not what Tina's doing, so good job for you, Tina, is try to solve this on your own. Like this is a major emotional trauma when you are being betrayed by your spouse, when there's this kind of level of infidelity and they're checked out and not willing to work on things. That is not a problem that we can solve on our own. Because if we could, we wouldn't have even gotten in this problem in the first place, right? So I rate this like, you know, this is like me going through stage 4 breast cancer. Like I couldn't do it on my own. So it's really important that you get outside expert care, whatever that feels best to you. As you guys know, of course, we offer that and we do specialize in that, but you need to get some outside perspective and guidance on how to set those healthy boundaries, what's appropriate at this stage and what's not. You know, the same advice that Mark and I could give to one person in one situation, maybe the completely wrong course for another person to take. And that's why we try to be very mindful of that in the podcast and kind of give some overarching principles that tend to work across the board. But if you really want to get down to what's going to work for you, it only happens in the one-on-one coaching. That's where we can customize exactly where you're at, what your spouse's triggers are, what their story is, what their unhealthy patterns are, what your unhealthy patterns are, you know, the dynamic of the entire relationship, and diagnose what's really going on, and then prescribe the right treatment plan for your situation. So that is my encouragement to everyone that's dealing with divorce and especially with affairs, is to get specific guidance for you. Okay. I can't say that enough. All right. So with that being said, I'm going to go over here to, I believe this one is from Virgil. He says, my wife has filed for divorce. We have reached a settlement. We have been separated for 2 years. Even before then, we coexisted for 10. A lot of it, I was a selfish, self-centered person, only thinking of myself. We did not stay emotionally connected. I moved to Alabama and told her I wanted a divorce. After a day or two, I realized I didn't. When I approached her, she said it was too late, that she was really glad that I said I did because she was already wanting one. Since I have taken classes to become a better man, she says that she's noticed I have changed, but it's too late. She said she doesn't have the love or desire in her heart to try.
I find that this one fascinating, mostly because there is recognition of change. It seems to me that the problem there is an emotional one more than anything else. Do you agree there? Do you think that's like the big block?
Yeah, this is a story of I'm not happy here. We've just kind of coexisted for years and years and years. I'm kind of glad that you said you want a divorce. And now that you did, it gives me the out.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's very similar to statements like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I also sometimes hear some variation or very similar statement like, they'll say, you know, I've fallen out of love. I just can't turn that back on. Or I just keep, I can't let go of the past. These are all very emotional sort of, it's a matter of emotion. I really like, there's an author, his name's Andrew Marshall. I happen to like Andrew Marshall, and he writes a book called I Love You, But I'm Not in Love with You. You know, it's about that statement right there, surprisingly. And his whole theory on that situation is that it all comes about from a problem with suppressing emotions, as in, you know, a relationship, you want the best for your partner, you want them to be happy. So it's easy to push down little annoyances or whatnot. And that can potentially have a snowball sort of situation. I start pushing down some emotions, it's harder to, it becomes easier to push down bigger emotions, and then those bigger negative emotions, I start pushing down other positive emotions with it, and so on and so forth. That's his theory, and I like the theory, because the counter to all of that then is this idea that there needs to be a channel for emotions to come out. And if someone's saying, I don't have the love or desire to try, it seems like somewhere there is a block of emotion. When I hear statements like this, it may be situations like, I wanted certain things in my life. I wanted some passion or excitement, and I kept getting no. Like there wasn't a channel to have those positive emotions present. Or we might have the opposite, like there wasn't a channel for negative emotions to come out and be processed. But, you know, if I had to talk to Virgil, and, you know, if I started looking into where Virgil needs to focus a little bit, I'd be looking at that. It's like, where can we create more flow with emotion? Where can we have more conversations around that? Not as a necessarily a way to, you know, once again, get back together. We're not trying to put pressure on that right now, but more as a way to maybe learn some things and to resolve some issues between the two of them. I would think that if Virgil's wife felt like a lot of that stuff could come out, it wouldn't seem so impossible. And it wouldn't, you know, like having that emotion there wouldn't seem such a, like a daunting task. If I, you know, it would be another matter entirely if Virgil's wife were to say, you know, I would like things to work out. I just don't have that emotion, because then there's, you know, I would think some similar exercises that need to happen, but there's other pieces when we have like cooperation from the spouse having some of these emotional issues. There's exercises to go through, ways to build up that positive emotion in proactive ways. But, you know, if Virgil's working on his own, I would start on that other spot, like making sure that there's a way for that emotion to flow through and to be discussed.
Agreed. Awesome. All right. So now we're going to go to a question from Jesse. They say, we've been separated for a year, April 7th. I've been watching all the videos and have been on multiple calls and watch a lot of live trainings. We were getting close again. I've already worked really hard on becoming the best person I could possibly be. We got all the way to the, oh shoot, I pushed a button and it went away. Okay. We got all the way to the point where she was considering the possibility of us getting back together. Today, she sends me a message saying she no longer wants to meet in person to discuss our issues and doesn't feel comfortable anymore. Not only wants to talk over, oh, now she only wants to talk over the phone, calls, and text. I think she's going to file for divorce once the 1 year mark hits. I'm lost and don't understand how I flipped like that when everything was going so well. He says that it started recently. We're living together. They do talk every day. And everything he tries just seems to backfire. We don't seem to communicate, but he's 100% committed to turning his relationship around.
Mm-hmm. So right there, it's somewhat similar. I think that there's something that's not like coming out. In this case, you know, I might suggest something a little bit different. In this case, what I think is needed is what are called here and now conversations. So like what I mean by here and now conversation, this is like almost like a interviewing skill in terms of like therapeutic interviewing skill. Sometimes when in a session, like you might know, like I might notice that a client is getting agitated about something, even though we're talking about like whatever, the dog, their relationship, their job, whatever it happens to be, but I'm noticing that they're getting agitated. A here and now conversation, then instead of focusing in on whatever the subject is way over there, it's a focus on what's going on between this person and myself. And I oftentimes, what it's about is I make observations. I say, hey, I'm noticing that you're really agitated as you talk about this. I'd like to understand that. I'd like to, you know, and I ask some questions about those feelings that are happening right now. Why I'm bringing this up with Jesse is I feel like that's not happening. Here we have recognition of change. They're getting close again. They're talking about getting back together. And like all of a sudden, like this person is saying, I don't feel comfortable anymore. Okay, well, there's some awfully big follow-up that needs to happen here. Like that shouldn't be the end of the conversation. That should be like the beginning of a, you know, at least many conversations there. You know, like I could make some guesses here as to what it is. I could, you know, much like some of the other people we've talked about, Heather, there could be some triggers here. That you know, some of the actions, maybe something reminded Jesse's partner here of like what happened before. I have no idea, and sounds like Jesse doesn't either. And that conversation just didn't go far enough. So, yeah. In general, I just think a lot more that here and now, like, hey, this seems to be going on. I'm noticing you feel like this. Or you seem to be feeling like this. I'm noticing this reaction right here. I'm not understanding that because I thought things were going well. I would like to talk about it. Like we were just talking about before, like making sure that there's that flow of conversation, flow of emotion. That's very important. And I interrupted you, Heather. You were going to say something.
Oh, no, I was waiting for you. That was really good. creating that safety around having that conversation in the here and now. So, Mark, here we are talking about some of the secrets to stop divorce, right? And they're secrets, but they're not really secrets because we do this every day. It's just most people don't know about them, yeah. Right? So most people would take a comment like that from their spouse, and that would be the end of the conversation, right? Most people don't realize that there are things that they can do in the here and now, in the moment, to have a good conversation. So I'm curious, you know, we've helped so many people, thousands of people now, thousands of couples with their relationships. Can you give maybe a case study or an example where a client was given one of those kind of statements, I just don't care anymore, I'm done trying, after maybe things were going well for a while even, and part of their story flared up, right? And how we kind of guided them through that conversation or through that situation, showed them how to have that kind of here and now conversation, and then the difference that that made in the outcome that they got. I'm putting you on the spot here.
I actually think about some situations like that. I'm thinking of one couple that I was working with. Now, when I had gotten to them, the husband had already left once and was out of the house and had already come back. Had left once, had come back, and then had left again. And so this was a scenario where problems hadn't really been fully resolved. So he came back and he was like, okay, well, I'll give this a try. And then almost immediately was talking about how nothing had changed and everything was just going back to the way things were. And so we're seeing some similarities here. And, you know, if I had to characterize this guy who had left more than once, you know, part of the problem was he really was not comfortable with like talking about how he felt or bringing up some of his concerns. And so once again, we're seeing this like problem with this flow of like being able to talk about things, being able to address some of the issues going on. His wife was much more like, I was going to say combative. Combative is not the right word. Straightforward, very direct, very go-getter sort of person. And, you know, so she felt like everything was fine because he wasn't sharing. So she had to learn to like slow down and encourage him to talk. He had to learn to open up a little bit more. It ended up being that they did start having sessions together. And in that case, but before that happened, before they started having sessions together, there was a whole lot of anger. There's a whole lot of like irrational accusations, a whole lot of like, this is never going to work and you're never going to change. So like this was a whole process. I think I worked with that, with the female, the wife, for a good like 4 months before her husband came around. And then I worked with them as a couple for another like several, you know, few months before things all got settled. And in the end, he did end up moving back in, and at least that was the last I heard from him. So they'd moved back in and they felt really stable with things. I don't know if that was quite what we're looking for, but like the whole process there was like a period of where the husband was saying very much like this, like there were some triggers that happened when he came back, like this isn't working. So we had to have some of these here and now conversations where like the feelings had to come out. And they had to be processed. And so he started feeling heard. And then things calmed down. They built up some trust for a bit. They learned some new skills. And then everything was good.
Yeah. And that is why I say over and over and over again, right? So many times in this situation, we just tend to clam up or we go back to our old patterns, right? And we keep doing the same things. We're going to keep getting the same results. That's why it's so important that you learn how to do just a few things differently. So you're going to get very different results. So for Jesse here, you know, it really is about approaching those kind of statements from your wife and creating safety around that conversation, getting to the root of it. It's going to communicate so much more to her, and you're going to get a completely different result in time. All right. Question here from Sarah is live. I got the I love you, but not in love with you in January. He is angry because I checked out on him and our family due to my mental health. It was a wake-up call for me, and I'm now on medication and working on my childhood trauma. We are living together and sleeping together. I quit calling and texting him, and he said it's helping. Things seem great during the weekend, and he goes cold during the week while he is at work. What am I doing wrong? I asked her, if you're here live, Sarah, what are you already doing to try to resolve this? And how long has this pattern been going on? So if you're able to answer those questions, that would also give us more clarity on what's happening.
You know what stood out to me, Heather, in that that paragraph or those few sentences? I quit calling and texting him, and he said it was helping. And that was like, oh my, what is going on there? I can make some guesses. You want to take a stab at it? Like, why do you think that would be helpful?
Right. Well, oftentimes when your spouse is pulling away, we can't help but kind of over-text, over-ask, over-push conversation. You know, we get into the kind of the fear, the desperation, the pleading mode, and we put a lot of pressure on the relationship, which then does not feel safe to our spouse. They want to pull away even more. So by taking that pressure off, giving him that space, maybe he's even made requests about kind of stopping some of those things. He's now feeling more respected and feeling less pressure is what I'm guessing. What are you guessing?
I'm guessing something similar is going on there. If not calling and texting was really relieving, I have to wonder at the content of that. And I'm just going to make some assumptions here. If we're talking about mental health issues and childhood trauma, I wonder if there's like a lot of anxiety or fear of there was a lot of checking in with the husband. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a lot of like messages like, hey, how are you doing now? Do you love me now? Is it okay now? Are we good now? And I, even if it's not that specifically, I imagine that there was a lot of emotional flooding going on with those sort of situations. Now, you know, I'm going to just say, I don't know Sarah, but I wonder, you know, how much he's actually going cold or how much like during the week or how much he's just focusing on work. Now, that doesn't mean that Sarah shouldn't talk about this with her husband, but, you know, I wonder if there's some different expectations in terms of communication during the work week, or not just different expectations, like just, you know, people operate a little bit differently. I don't always need to check in with my wife all the time during the work day, but my wife really likes to check in here and there. And that's just, it's not because I don't care. It's just because it doesn't really occur to me that that's needed. So with this case, you know, I do think that something needs to go on there instead of like a conversation about what needs to stop, as in she needs to quit calling and texting all the time. I think there needs to be a discussion of proactive behavior that could build things up. If there is a little bit of coldness during the week, you know, rather than just not calling and texting, what are they wanting instead? And I always hate those sort of goals of like, okay, we're going to make things better by not fighting. We're going to make things better by not putting pressure on this or not bothering the other person. What?
The dead man goals, right?
Yeah, it's exactly that.
I had this goal. I was like, I'm not going to eat sugar. I was like, a dead man could do that. And Mark always says, if a dead man can do it, it's not a good goal.
Yeah. Exactly. And like, you know, a good relationship is not going to be defined by the things that are absent in it. It's like, you're not going to say, yeah, I have such an amazing relationship. My wife doesn't beat me. No one's going to say that. So like, I do think that there needs to be a lot more of a focus because it sounds like this isn't a situation where her husband is completely gone or doesn't want the marriage. He might be looking for some relief. He might want it to actually support like a nice life rather than just not have problems. That's what I'm seeing here. So if Sarah could sit down with her husband and say, hey, look, I want this to be an amazing marriage, not just a marriage where we don't feel pressured. What would we need to be doing differently, saying differently, thinking differently? What kind of narrative are we trying to build up here? Well, there's lots of different ways of approaching that.
Agreed. All right. Awesome. We have time for a few more. So Tim asks, he said that he had a situation similar to the one that we shared before, kind of the hot, cold. But now she's the one that has left for the fourth time. She says there are things she has. Okay, sorry. She has feeling about, but won't talk to me about them because she is afraid of either my reaction or action. How do I get her to open up to me? She moved back in with the guy she cheated with last time. She says nothing is going on between them, that she is just staying there. Not sure what to believe at this point. We've been separated this time for 5 months so far. She refuses to talk to me, has blocked me on Facebook, and has blocked me on her phone before she couldn't pay the bill and they suspended her service. Only contact I have now is through email. Not even sure she is reading them. So now you're wondering at this point, how can I get her to open up to me? So my question is, if you are blocked on Facebook, you're blocked on the phone, and you can only talk through email, do you ever see each other face to face? Is there any reason for you to have communication at all? That's my first question, because that's going to really determine how much we can start to turn things around. If it's just email and you're not even sure if she's getting them, that does not sound like a super great situation to me. And I hate to tell you that, but that's the truth, is that you have to be able to at least communicate with each other in order to get things opened up. There has to be at least some opportunity there. So if you could give us some clarity, if there's opportunity there, she lives 2.5 hours away. So I'm assuming you probably don't see each other that often either. So that becomes even more challenging. Mark, what do you think?
Now, there are occasions when people come our way and they say, I have hardly any contact with my spouse, but I still want some support. Mm-hmm. And there's some things that we can do here or there. But like you're saying, it becomes very complicated. Generally we're looking at how do we create some common goals, something that can be resolved together, or that she wants to resolve together, whether that is like if there's co-parenting issues or wanting to process through something. But right here, like, it doesn't sound like that's the case. I was just looking at something with Tim. But it was that first paragraph. She says there's things that she has feelings about, but won't talk to me about them because she's afraid of either my reaction or actions there. Somewhere in there, it is, I'm going to put it in quotes, dangerous to communicate. And rather than focus on getting the relationship back together or, whatever there, I think the primary goal needs to shift a little bit to resolving that. It's almost like the sequence of obstacles that needs to be handled. And if you don't have a safe environment for communication, it's really hard to start tackling other relationship issues. So, if I were to make some recommendations to Tim, I would say any of the communication that is happening should probably be focused on helping her feel safe with even some basic communication. We can't really focus on other things, because then the intent, the motivation seems suspect. It might be like, okay, Tim's trying to do this because he wants me back, because he's trying to control me, or he's trying to do, whatever it happens to be. And so there does need to be that focus on, let's make it safe. Let's make sure that we can communicate well. Let's make sure that you feel okay here before anything else.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Ryan, I just saw your comment. If you have a specific question you'd like us to answer about that, let us know. He says, my wife said she has checked out. It's been 2 weeks. I'm showing her grace and showing her I do love her. We just went through the loss of a child a year ago, and she feels empty inside. I'm afraid to bring up talking with with her for fear of pushing her away more. Wow, you guys have been through a lot. And so this has been checked out for about 2 weeks. I gotta get my camera here. I'm on my phone, sorry. And you guys are listening to the replay, you're like, what is she talking about? My camera's like showing my ear or something. Anyway, that doesn't matter. So, okay. So, it's been like 2 weeks. And so this is, you're pretty early on in the stages of this. And I'm assuming that, you know, losing a child a year ago has really created a lot of, trauma for you guys and added stressors and added, emotional things that you're trying to work through and process through. So Mark, with someone like, Ryan here, where it's only been about 2 weeks since she started saying these things, what would you recommend?
Well, what stood out to me with Ryan is him saying, like, there's fear of bringing up some topics because he's worried about pushing her away more. It tells me that there's some avoidance, very likely on both their ends. And, you know, it's, you know, I'm gonna go back to Andrew Marshall again. When we start doing that, when we start pushing down emotions, it's hard to just do that with some emotions and not others. Like, it's really hard to feel close to someone if you can't share your full self with them. If you can't share being sad or angry, or if you can't share the grief of a, you know, a lost child, it's really hard to feel close to that person. Perhaps Ryan doesn't feel comfortable with bringing that subject up, in which case, you know, I think that the best course of action is to try to make it at least safe enough to bring up the topic with a professional. But I do think that some things need to come out, because that's what I'm seeing here is avoidance on both ends. And it's understandable. Not wanting to have to deal with the loss of a child is a very scary thing to face. I can only imagine what that would be like. And I would, you know, I'm the kind of person that I would probably want to push that to the side as well. But if Ryan is really wanting to resolve the issues within the marriage, I think, you know, finding a safe way to process through some of that grief together, that could be a really building experience. You know, I can imagine a situation where Ryan really shows up and is there for his wife and helps her to get over some of this grief, not by like pushing it down, but like really embracing it for a bit and helping it feel like a positive experience. That would create a situation where Ryan would really have a wife who's appreciative and probably would have a whole ton of commitment to that situation. So, you know, like, that's what I like, my little bit of advice here for Ryan is like, let's not hide from this, but if you don't feel confident in, you know, helping your wife process through this yourself, really be supportive and seeking out professional help.
Yeah. He asks further here, I wish she would talk to a professional. How would I bring that up? And so I agree with Mark, what you said here, that there's probably avoidance on both sides. There's kind of an unwillingness to look at some of these things, a hesitancy around that. It doesn't feel safe. You are wanting to be supportive of your wife and show her care. But sometimes the most supportive thing that we can do is not try to fix them, right? Or have them give them the impression that they need to be fixed, because no one wants to be fixed, but to offer that in a way that's not going to backfire. And so, again, I echo what Mark said here to get some guidance on how to do that. Specifically, we have ways of framing conversations and creating safety around sensitive topics so that they don't backfire and you are able to communicate some of those home messages. That's another thing I heard Mark pick up here, was like creating safety. I'm here for you. I'm supportive. And this is something that we do need to address. So our relationship is one where we handle the challenges of life together. And I am here for you and you are here for me. And we have a relationship where issues are talked about. They aren't swept under the rug, creating home messages around a lot of safety in the relationship, safety in communicating, safety in vulnerability and the challenges that you're facing. And that's going to go a long way as you create that new story, right? So for everyone, think for a moment about how you want your relationship to really be. How do you really want to talk about things? How do you want to address issues? How do you want to spend your time? How do you want to feel together? How close and safe do you want to feel? How trusting do you want to feel? We got another question here I'm not going to have time to go into, but he's the one that actually broke the trust and now he's trying to restore it. So how do you want to show up? How do you want to be in your relationship? Create that destination in your mind and hold fast to it, because when you do, then you will get there. It's going to take time and it's going to take changes, but it's better than like letting yourself just drift about on the ocean and get ripped up, right? So really decide where you want to go and create those messages around that destination. I want to be supportive of you. I want to be someone that you can trust. I want to be a better version of myself. I want a relationship that feels safe and secure and close and loving and passionate and fun and all of those things. All right. So thank you so much, Mark. Thank you everyone for submitting your questions. We don't have time to take any more, but we will answer every single one that we get. And if you're listening to the replay on YouTube or anywhere else, leave comments because we answer every single one of them. And if you want more help with this on how to turn an unwilling spouse who's not willing to talk to you, not willing to open up, into someone that's willing to talk with you, then leave a comment and say willing in the comments below, and we will get you our free guide on how to shift a spouse that's unwilling to become more willing to work on the marriage with you. Next week, we're going to share with you what you need to stop doing in order to get your spouse back. So thank you so much, Mark, and thank you all for joining us today. We can't wait to see your marriage thrive.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.